Welcome to This Week in Craft Beer, the podcast, the weekly show where we interview the people making the magic happen in the UK craft beer scene, sponsored by Them That Can, the premier mobile canning service in the UK. This Week in Craft Beer publishes the UK's leading craft beer newsletter every Monday morning by email. To subscribe for free, please visit www.thisweekincraft.beer. This Week in Craft Beer would like to thank our generous Patreon supporters, John Stevens, Nick Flynn, Jamie Ramsey, Sue Johnson, Steve Hartley, Jazz Hundell, Phantom Brewing Company, Dolphin Brewery, Bayonet Brewing Co., The Paper Mill Micropub, Doug Thayer, Robert Baker, Aid Bardi, The Sociable Beer Company, and The Small Batch Brewing Co. So I'm delighted to welcome to the podcast this evening Gareth from Daya Brewing, based in Cheltenham. Daya was founded by Theo Frayne in 2015, following the completion of his master's in brewing at Heriot-Watt. Having become obsessed with American beer and beer culture, Theo began perfecting the recipe for Steady Rolling Man, initially as a home brewer, before taking on Daya's first commercial unit in Cheltenham. Gareth Moore joined Daya as head brewer in 2016, and Daya were then on a fast track to the position they hold today as one of the most celebrated craft brewers in Europe. Gareth, please introduce yourself and tell us about your beer journey which led you to becoming part of Daya.
Hi everybody, my name is Gareth. I'm the head brewer at Daya Brewing Company. Thank you very much for the introduction, Rob.
Pleasure.
Yeah, so as Rob said, I joined Daya in 2016, and then it was a very small company. It was Theo, the owner, and me, and Theo's mum, Reg. And we basically spent the first year just brewing Steady Rolling Man, which seems to have caught on.
Funny you should say that, yeah.
Yeah.
Time well spent.
Yeah, I can dig into that a little bit more, the evolution of that beer, I'm sure.
Yeah, let's have your background first, Gareth. Yeah, so how did you first get into craft beer? Let's start there.
So actually, I got into craft beer when I was studying in Krakow in Poland.
Oh, wow. Cool.
Yeah, so my first craft beer was a Polish West Coast IPA called Etak Chmielu by Browar Pinta. That was the first craft beer I had.
Brilliant.
Growing up, late teens, early 20s, I've always enjoyed beer. But yeah, that was my first craft beer in 2012, I guess.
Yeah. Right, yeah.
Once I finished studying in Poland, I came back to the UK and I needed a job. And so I carpet bombed my CV in the local towns of Cheltenham and Gloucester. And by just pure luck, I got a job at a brewery in Gloucester called Gloucester Brewery.
Right.
Started very much entry level, doing sales and helping out cleaning.
Glass washing.
Yeah, exactly. All the glamorous stuff. Then I was very lucky to have the opportunity to start doing some of the brewing there. Then one of the other brewers left. Well, the other brewer left. And then I got a chance to be doing all the brewing, which was really cool. So that's really where I sort of cut my teeth in learning the brewing process.
Right.
There's a very good bottle shop in Cheltenham called Favorite Beers. And I'm good friends with the owner. And right. he tipped me off that there's a new craft brewer coming to Cheltenham.
Nice.
So I gave Lee from Favorite Beers. I gave him my email to give to the person who was starting this new craft brewery, who was Theo. And I said, you know, welcome to the neighborhood. Let's go and have a beer. Yeah, so we went out, had a few beers, and he was talking about his sort of his business plan and his plan for Daya. And one thing led to another. I asked him if he needed a brewer. He said yes, and that's how I got started working at Daya. So.
Fantastic.
Quite a lot of serendipity. Yeah, I consider myself very lucky to have had that opportunity.
Well, I'm sure you were hired on merit and have very much justified your existence ever since. Did you have any American beer experience to bring into Daya at that stage, or were you pretty traditional brewing at Gloucester?
So at Gloucester Brewery, there was a mix done. It was, I guess, volume-wise, it was more of a focus on traditional English styles.
Right.
But a lot of them used American hops.
Okay.
So
right.
Cascade, Chinook. Actually, some very good Galaxy early days.
Nice.
And they did keg beer too. So I got to brew some of those styles.
Okay, great. Yep.
Yeah, but the styles of beer that Theo wanted to make at Daya were quite different to that, and also quite different in the UK. We've been by no means the first people to do it, but the East Coast, juicy, hazy sort of thing was not so common in 2016. It seems like a lifetime ago now.
It does, yeah. Yeah, I guess, you know, Cloudwater were on that path at that stage.
Yeah, for sure.
And one or two others, but, you know, it was nothing like as prevalent. I'm really curious. Did Theo tell you when he hired you that you were going to spend the first year just brewing one beer and, you know, a million attempts at it and, you know, and fine-tuning? Or was that a surprise when you got in the door?
Yeah, I guess the trite answer is I didn't exactly know what to expect with regards to that. So we went to a beer festival and he was showing me all these. Basically, he showed me these styles of beer. I wasn't really aware of the juicy pale ales and IPAs. And he was telling me these are the things that I really want to focus on. So focus is good, I think. It's
definitely.
Yeah, it's difficult enough to succeed. So having that focus early on, I think helped both of us and helped the business get off to a good start.
Yeah, absolutely. And so what did it look like in those early days? So at that stage, you were Steady available as a commercial product, or were you still sort of pre-production, if you can use that phrase there?
I joined when it was a commercially available product.
Okay.
For about a year beforehand, Theo was doing Cuckoo Brewing, contract brewing.
Yeah.
Other local breweries. Mm-hmm. So there were a few batches of those steadies knocking around when I started.
Right.
He was quite determined to move all of the as soon as he fitted out the brewery in that space, was keen to have all of the beer made there.
Yes, absolutely. Yeah.
So yeah, I mean, we had the tap room was open there, so it was steady version 1, version 2, version 3, version 4 for a little while.
Wow. So that was still on the same site as the brewery now is currently. It's just
it's in the same industrial estate.
Yes,
but we were in a much smaller unit.
That's right. But you've moved around. You sort of moved into the next little cul-de-sac. Down the,
exactly,
the,
yeah.
the street, didn't you? To the much larger premise. But you've still got the old premises. Am I right?
Yes. So yep. the old premises now is focused on mixed fermentation.
Yes,
so that's
is.
where we age our mixed fermentation beer. Mm-hmm. And we also have kept the tap room space there. So that's a tap room. That's a second tap room that focuses on our mixed fermentation beer. So we've still got that space, which is cool.
Yeah, absolutely. So this is fabulous. You've literally got those two tap rooms in adjacent streets in, you know, and I know the mixed firm tap room is not open the same number of sessions as the clean beer side, but even still, it's great that people have got that choice and the variety there. It's absolutely awesome. I was lucky enough to come to the Little Summer Beer Bash, which was that summer of 2018. Does that sound right? When you just got the keys to the new building, but you hadn't moved the brewery in, or at least I think some of the vessels were in, but they weren't. It wasn't sort of plumbed in and commissioned. So it was.
We had a couple of things in, but the space was pretty open, so that was handy if you need to hold a big beer festival.
Absolutely, that was awesome, and you know that was my first visit to the site.
It was lovely to have that opportunity to have that festival in that space, because although we weren't making a thing of it, it was, you know, hopefully some people saw that space and then we were telling everyone, all of the staff who were working there were saying, you know, we're going to put our brewery here, and it was really exciting. So hopefully some people got to see it, you know, before and after.
Definitely, you know, and it was just lovely to come in and see the scope of what, you know, what was in your future, I guess, really there. But, you know, looking at that space and what it's now become, it's fabulous. And there's a really nice, I mean, it continues to be a really nice festival. Obviously, it was badly blighted for a couple of years by COVID, but it did finally come back this year in the summer down at Burden. And I'm guessing the next edition will be at LHG in Bristol. Is that right? On the road?
Yeah, so that's the rotation. So really looking forward to that.
So you guys will be back in 2024, but that's going to presumably need to be at a different site, is it? I don't know. I mean, obviously, it's a long way in the future, so it's not really fair to ask the question. But
no, yeah, we've still got big outside space, but yeah, that is something we will need to think about. Who knows what the world's going to look like?
No, indeed, it's not a problem you need to solve today, anyway. So we'll move swiftly on. But I just wanted to say, you know, that is a really nice. That's a nice festival. It's you know, going to a lot of really big festivals these days, it's kind of nice to go to something that's a little bit more intimate. Obviously, you know, it's still on a significant scale and there's a lot of great beer there. but it feels like you can sort of get your arms around it and actually get around the room and speak to everybody. And you know, I hope it continues in that vein rather than become another mega festival. You know, it's even though it obviously means that the tickets are a bit exclusive because of that.
Yeah, I think that's, I don't want to put words in Verdant's mouth, but I think that's sort of one of the reasons why they started it. So the very first one was almost all breweries that were local to them.
Right.
Plus other people, a few other friends from around the UK, but there was a lot of locally featured breweries, and it was low key, but in a good way. It was nice.
No, absolutely. We've already referred several times to Steady Rolling Man. I think it's now time to talk about it specifically because we're both cracking into a delicious glass of it. Steady Rolling Man, let me read the tasting notes. 5.2%. Nobody probably else really needs to hear this, but I'm going to read it anyway because I think it's really nicely phrased. 5.2% pale. Tasting notes say, our pale ale, inspired by the ridiculously tasty hoppy beers we fell for. We got brewing our own versions over and over again while listening to the blues greats. The heady concoction of old-time blues records and juicy American hops transfixed us from the start, and the Rolling Man was born in these sessions. Incredibly soft and delicate with intense tropical hop aromatics and saturation, this is our vision of the perfect pale ale. Not perfectly read, but nice, nicely phrased. Yeah, there's nothing to be said really about this other than just to celebrate it. I think it's a lovely, lovely beer. You know, it's been one of my favourites for as long as I've been in craft beer, and it's great that it's so widely available now. You know, you've finally caught up to demand, I think, with this beer now. So it is available as a core pale in a lot of the best tap rooms in Britain. So fabulous. Let's drink to that.
Cheers.
What do you want to say about Steady, Gareth?
I guess maybe some of the listeners, Steady is now, as you said, like reasonably widely available, but maybe for some of the, in case there's some listeners who haven't had it, I encourage them to try and get some and try it. It's the beer that most represents us as a brewery. Mm-hmm. It's our flagship beer in terms of, it's about half of our whole production volume. So it's
is that right? So yeah, what does that represent in terms of barrels or cans or kegs, whatever, however you want to phrase it?
So it's about 24,000 litres a week brewed. That's before, I mean, there's obviously some losses during production.
Oh, yeah.
So I can try and do some maths on a calculator in the background while I'm continuing to answer your question.
That's at least what it starts at. And how does that break down between keg and can as a percentage, roughly?
It depends somewhat, but probably between 20 and 30% can. So a bit lower on the can side. There's other beers that we make that we can a lot more of. But so Steady is, the idea of Steady Rolling Man is, when we first started making it, these kinds of beers were not so common in the UK.
No.
So it was maybe a bit more of a challenge for people. There's the obvious hazy thing, which we can get into if you like, but I don't know if that's a moot point or not on this podcast.
No, I think that's, I don't think anybody's going to be worrying about that.
There's also the fact that the bitterness is low, the carbonation is quite low, mm-hmm. and without going into detailed specifics, these beers are like juicy, right? So they're
absolutely,
they're kind of, in 2016, they were somewhat unfamiliar to people. Mm-hmm. So we wanted to make a beer, well, Theo wanted to make a beer that was very intense, but also not challenging. So one of the main focuses was to keep the body soft, the bitterness low, just enough bitterness to have closure to your palate.
Right.
You don't want like a flabby finish.
No.
Yeah. And interestingly, I was going through a clear out a few months ago and I found the very first brew sheet.
Oh.
The very first brew sheet that was done in at Daya. The hop bill had changed a little bit from the very first brew back in 2016, but the grain bill was actually almost identical. Kind of interesting.
Nice. Yeah.
We haven't changed the recipe for Steady for a very long time.
You tweaked the water a bit since those early days, have you? So
the first year we were brewing it, there were some reasonably big changes. You start off with a very wide range and then you try and narrow in on your range and hone in on individual things.
Uh-huh.
So the beer is, sorry, I should talk more about the beer. So we use American hops in the beer. The dominant hop is Mosaic, which is a very commonly used American hop.
Yep.
There's other hops in it, which I can't tell you, but it's
a little bit of intrigue.
it's a lot of Mosaic. Yeah, we use, for almost all of our beers, we use a blend of three English yeasts,
right?
Which are also have a lot of their own fruit flavor. So the yeasts we use are very peachy and apricotty. So they bring a lot of their own fruit aroma,
right,
which complements the hop aroma.
Absolutely.
And a soft water profile. We can get into that if you like. When talking about East Coast, New England, juicy, hazy, mm-hmm. whatever you want to call them, these kinds of beers, when we say soft water profile, when I say a soft water profile, I don't mean soft water. What I mean is we tweak the water profile so the body of the beer is soft, and
right.
full yeah. and rounded.
Yeah.
So this beer is not made with soft water.
Right.
The water we get in Cheltenham is medium hard, mm-hmm. which is not a problem for us.
No.
So what we do to tweak our water is we add quite a lot of chloride.
Right.
There's when you're brewing beer, there's very broadly speaking, there's two main salts that brewers would add.
Yep.
One is called calcium sulfate, mm-hmm. and that would make the beer more dry,
right.
accentuate the bitterness.
Okay.
And the other one is calcium chloride, which accentuates sweetness
right.
and full body,
mm-hmm.
a soft body. So mm-hmm. we favor the calcium chloride over the sulfate.
Right.
So actually, the way we treat our water is more like how a traditional English brewery would treat their water if they were brewing a porter.
That's interesting. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
This is by no means our discovery. Yeah, iterative.
Very good. Well, of
standing
course,
on the shoulders of giants.
I think that's fair, isn't it, of the industry as a whole? And that's one of the wonders of it, actually, is that people are prepared to share the secrets so widely in this industry, and something I think we particularly celebrate.
No, it's great that the sort of spirit of collaboration and information sharing has really helped. I think really helped the industry.
Yes, definitely. We were at Indie Man a few weeks ago where you debuted Steady on Cask.
Yes.
How did that come about? I mean, presumably wouldn't have been the first time you'd thought about doing it or the first time you'd been asked to do it, but how were you finally persuaded to do it? That might be where to start with this conversation.
Yeah, I think I wrote on some of the copy for the marketing, we said we'd never do it. Yeah, so what persuaded us to do it? I don't know. Maybe we'd got asked enough times, so we were like, stuff it. Will
That's right. Yeah. I've stopped. Go away and get on with something else now. That's right.
Yeah, yeah. Not. Yeah, maybe. That sounds a bit negative, but I think there was an element of that. There was also so we did it to launch the Indie Man Beer Con in Manchester,
yes.
And we were confident that we would sell a lot of cask beer in Manchester around Indie Man. So obviously one of the obstacles one of the issues you have with cask beer is getting through it while it's fresh.
Right, absolutely.
And especially actually with these styles, talking about hazy, juicy New England styles, mm-hmm. they are very, very susceptible to staling.
Right.
It's an inherent aspect of how they're made. So I would say they don't usually suit being put into a cask. Or if you put them in a cask, you need to sell that cask in a day.
Yes, which is a big ask for a lot of outlets. Although,
yeah, yeah.
And it's not for some.
Well, it's an unfair and unrealistic
expectation
for lots of places. But then, you know, we're thinking these beers are relatively sweet, full-bodied, as are a lot of cask beers. So, yeah, I guess we're like, yeah, let's see what happens. And it was a success.
It certainly was, yeah.
Yeah. I think Cafe Beer Moth sold 10 casks in 4 days or something.
Did they?
Stupid.
Yeah, that was where we had the pleasure of several pints of it. And I think...
Well, what did you think? Did you like it?
Oh, I thought it was magnificent. It was everything I'd hoped it would be. You know, it was...
So it was recognisably steady?
I think it was, yeah. I think that, you know, the flavour was absolutely consistent, you know, with what I'd hoped it would be. Yeah, you know,
we did make some small tweaks to the recipe, so we changed some of the hop ratios, mm-hmm. and we actually increased the bitterness a little bit, and we changed the salt profile of the water a little bit to compensate for the lower carbonation and
right.
the sort of warmer serving temperature of cask beer.
Yes.
So we made some adjustments, hoping that it would taste the same.
I think it did. I mean, I didn't taste them side by side. Perhaps that would have been the true, you know, the ultimate test would be to have a keg glass, you know, next to it. But it certainly, it was recognisable, I think, and it was lovely.
It was a fun thing to do. I think in the earlier days of the brewery, if we'd done that, we would have made a rod for our own back.
Right.
Yeah. I think it would be difficult to keep that on as a permanent
Yeah, I don't think
offering.
No, I don't, and I don't think, you know, but could we see that coming back for sort of summer festival season next year, for example? Is that, would that be realistic?
I mean, that's the thing, right? If you say you never do something and then you do it once, you might have to do it again at some point. I don't know, maybe.
That'd be a nice thing to have a little summer beer bash next summer in Bristol, for example, wouldn't it? But the nice.
Yeah, that's me being coy.
Yeah, yeah, fair enough. I won't press on it. But it was, yeah, you know, look, anybody that, and I'm sure, you know, quite a lot of people listening to this would have been in Manchester that weekend, so I would have tasted it. But
well, I hope you all enjoyed it, everybody, and well, let us know what you thought about it.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. That would be nice. One more comment on, not just on Steady, but your canned beer in general, is the 500ml cans. I don't think I've ever had a day of beer that wasn't in a 500ml can, but were they always 500ml cans, or did you start in 440s?
Well, no, we actually started in 1,000ml cans.
Did you really? Good Lord. We had proper stovepipe cans. You don't see those.
Yeah, litre cans. Not for very long. There was a very small contract canner who would come to the brewery and can beer out of kegs. Yeah, that was our first offering, but we quite quickly stopped that. So yeah, the reason we get asked this question, we've been asked this question quite a few times, and I don't think there's a very scientific answer. But from me and Theo were talking early on, and we're like, well, that's nearly a pint, isn't it? So
yeah,
beer comes in pints. It's nearly a pint. I think maybe we did it for no good reason, and then it became a point of difference, and so we stuck with it.
Right.
There's no better reason than that, I think. Apart from
My thoughts are, if you're drinking a beer that you're enjoying, having that extra 60ml is basically another decent mouthful of it, isn't it? So that's great. I don't see why, if you're drinking a crushable beer, then having 500ml rather than 440, happy days. You know, that works for me. If it's a 12% imperial stout or something, then maybe don't need that extra 60ml. But I think, you know, the vast majority of your production output, it's great to have that extra mouthful. Is there an argument that says there's the same amount of dissolved oxygen in every can, and so in a 500ml there's less oxygen per milliliter of beer? I don't know if that makes sense, does it?
But no, yeah, all else being equal, the amount of headspace when you package the beer to the volume of the beer you're packaging is less.
Yeah. So maybe that is a slight quality benefit. I don't know.
Yeah. And there's also, I guess, less material cost in the aluminium per milliliter of beer.
But on the other hand, can you get the can stock? You know, is it more expensive to buy 500ml cans and 440s? I'm sure it must be a tiny bit, but.
Yeah, but proportionally, I mean, as I understand, actually, there were, so during lockdown where people were having to sort of hustle a bit and was maybe struggling to secure can stock, we had a little bit of that, but I think maybe that helped us, the fact that we weren't after the same size as
lots of other
small breweries.
Makes sense, yeah. I mean, there's one or two others that do it. Arbor down the road in Bristol do 500ml cans, don't they?
I believe they're actually pint cans.
Oh, are they? Okay.
I think they are 568ml.
So. Oh, I apologise. I should know that.
Well, yeah, last time I picked one up, it was.
Yeah.
Which I don't know where they get them made. I mean, that's quite uncommon.
That is pretty random, yeah.
So they've beaten us. They've actually got a pint in there.
Yeah, so they've got two extra mouthfuls compared to a 440 can. Than you. No, as you say, even if it's just a sort of a slight differentiating gimmick, and, you know, I mean, I don't mean that in any way disrespectfully, then that's all good anyway, isn't it? It's just, it's a topic of conversation and...
More label space.
It's just, you know, I did want to, you know, whilst we're talking about your beer in cans, it's great that you can actually get them these days, because, you know, for so long, Daya was the brand that you couldn't get, really, unless you were actually, you know, well enough on the ball to be on your website on the day that the can release went up, and it would sell out in an hour. And, you know, that's great that, you know, you had that sort of that scarcity sort of cachet, and people, you know, were so focused on getting hold of your beers. But it was pretty, you know, it wasn't so good if you actually weren't, you know, you were sort of working during the day and weren't actually able to grab them. So it's, you know, it's terrific that the production capacity has finally at least somewhat caught up with the demand.
I feel just because I don't get to say this to people en masse, I'm sorry if people struggled to get our beer and couldn't, and it was never let's artificially inflate.
Oh, no, I'm not suggesting it was. I think you were doing the best you could, on, you know, with the capacity that you had, you know, for those years.
There was a confluence of things getting in our way. One was the web shop was not fit for purpose. I mean, it would crash. So, I mean, that's on us. That's definitely our fault. Also, we were limited by the speed of our packaging line, our canning line. So anyone who's worked on a brewery canning line knows that it goes wrong very often. So that was one of the reasons as well why we had to cancel things last minute, or we couldn't release a beer because we couldn't package it when we said we could. Also, we were at capacity at the site, the previous brewery site. So we were brewing as much as we could. And it would only go so far. I think we were having to say no to lots of people. I don't mean individuals, sorry. There were lots of bars and pubs and distributors who were wanting the beer. And well, for us, the right thing to do is to preserve the relationships with our existing business partners, the people who supported us from the beginning. So we were having to say no to lots of people, which didn't feel nice.
No.
And I totally get people's frustration. Yeah.
There is a sort of scarcity value to it, isn't there? Which, you know, I know you weren't deliberately setting out to achieve that, but I do think it probably helped to grow the reputation of the business. I think that, you know, you still have that reputation, even though you can now get the beers much more easily.
Yeah, well, I mean, we were keen to make sure that we deserve the reputation we got. So people were maybe getting excited. And as you said, there's some scarcity sort of value in it. But we were keen that when we could make more beer, it really needed to be worth the wait. So it's relatively easy to buy more tanks and just make more beer. The more difficult thing is to keep the consistency.
Maintain the quality level, yeah.
Yeah, absolutely. That's like a bit of a cliche thing to say, but it is true in my experience.
And, you know, and I get it probably helped somewhat for you that you had almost adjacent units where you could build and commission and fine tune the new brew kit. But I guess perhaps before you needed to sort of switch production over, or you weren't in a situation, a lot of breweries are moving from one premises to another where you've got a massive disruption to your production.
We were so lucky that the previous occupant of the building we're now doing our main production in, they needed to move as we needed to expand. Well, we could have done with doing it 6 months earlier, but we were extremely lucky that we had that space to move into. So lots of breweries didn't have that luxury. When they need to move, they need to stop, decommission, uninstall everything. I think actually some breweries get a bit of a hard rap from the consumers. I'm sticking up for expanding breweries here. When you have to shut down, decommission everything, reinstall it in a new place, like there is so many things you need to do. You can't just put the brew kit in a box and open the box, plug it in and turn it on again. it's really difficult to, even if you move the same equipment, let alone buy new equipment, even if you move the same equipment, something's going to change. You're going to have a different arrangement, and it's really difficult to maintain that quality and consistency.
Yeah,
just thought I should say that for any breweries who've got a hard time after they've expanded.
No, you know, I think the vast majority of people would agree with me in that, you know, I don't think you guys missed a beat. I think, you know, you were able to expand that production. You know, what was the multiplier from one site to another? It was like 4x or something, or was it more than even?
So we were brewing 16 hectolitres, so 1,600 litres 5 days a week. And then we went up to, the new brew kit was 4,000 litres per brew. We're now brewing 12 times a week on that. Wow. So we weren't doing that when we first moved over here. So we were brewing once a week or twice a week, and we were still brewing at the old site as well for about six.
So that means that six times, I think, that's if my math stands up.
To... No, 2.5 times the brew per brew length. But
but six times that, a week.
Basically six times. Yeah, I mean, the first few brews that we did, I think the first three, we threw them away before we dry hopped them.
Wow.
Because the bitterness was really off. The fermentation profile was a little bit, the yeast profile was a little bit odd. So they never saw the light of day. We managed to zero in fairly quickly, I think. And that's a big credit to all the brewers who were working on the first site as well. They're paying attention to detail was such that we could make that transition. Relatively easily. No, it wasn't without its issues.
No, I bet it was still, you know, it's never pleasant to pour beer away, that's for sure. I'm sure it was a fraught process. But how big's the team now, Gareth?
In the brewing team, we have five brewers, not including me. So there's five brewers, and two of those brewers alternate as like the senior brewer, like the team lead.
Okay.
So they do 1 week senior brewer and then 1 week in the general rotation.
Nice.
And then we have three other brewers. So we basically have four people doing all the brewing and cellaring. So taking it from raw material to beer ready to package.
Yep.
The packaging team is four people. So the packaging team is separate. The taproom team, how many is in the taproom team? There's eight people in the taproom team.
Right.
Warehouse is four people. Office is, well, there's a few different people in the office. But all in all, about six people. Yeah, six people in the office. And then we have five salespeople. So who am I forgetting? I'm definitely forgetting someone. Sorry if I've forgotten you.
No. Well, that's good. So 30, I made that 32. So that's a small business, but a very large craft brewery, you know, based on the sort of, you know, the people I have on this podcast. That, you know, I don't think there's probably very many that have been at that size. So
we're a big small brewery, I guess.
That's a significant team operating, I'm sure, you know, a very high level of intensity to produce the production that you're managing to turn out now.
Yeah, so it is. We run two shifts in the brewing and cellaring. So the first shift starts at 6, finishes at 3. Second shift starts at 11 and finishes at 8. So
that's nice. Actually, not bad hours, those are they?
Not so too bad.
You know, you switch between the two, and it's not bad from a sort of like, you know, quality of life perspective.
Yeah.
Excellent, Gareth. Let's take a short break. This Week in Craft Beer is sponsored by Them That Can, the premier mobile canning service in the UK. Them That Can deliver the machinery, labour, materials, and most importantly, the expertise to achieve a professionally canned product that keeps their clients happy. For more information about how you can get started with their amazing services, please visit www.themthatcan.com. So I'm back with Gareth from Daya for the second half of the show. Gareth, at this stage every week, I ask the same question. It usually turns out to be fun, so let's do that with you. What makes you different? What is it you're doing at Daya to stand out in the relatively crowded European craft beer scene?
Oh, that's one of the tricky ones. What makes us different? We're based in Cheltenham.
Good, and Cheltenham's
a bit different,
nice.
Yeah. What else makes us different? We use three English yeasts for our fermentations.
That is
probably makes
funky,
us different.
Actually, yeah, I like that.
So this sounds like evasion, doesn't it? What makes us different? I think there's probably a few things that come together to make us different. The fact that we are dedicated to making New England pale ales, we're dedicated to that, and IPAs. Sorry, but I mean pale ales is it?
Yes, yeah. So I think it's a collective term. Yeah,
we're dedicated to that style. And coupled with the fact that one beer is 50% of our production.
Yes. So I think that definitely is very, very unusual, yeah. For a modern craft brewery, I should say, because, you know, that's actually really common for sort of a traditional brewery, but I don't think there's probably, I can't think of another modern craft brewery that where there's that percentage dedicated to one beer.
And the logic behind that is that so we can be as dependable as possible for the people who are putting their hand in their pocket to pay money for our beer. Yeah. Is that different enough? I'm not sure.
That's a pretty good list of fairly significant differences that added together, I think, do become, something.
I don't want to sound like conceited and start reeling off how great we are.
Well, that goes without saying, I think.
Well, we try as hard as we can.
Yeah. Can I ask you just to take, you know, go back to the before the break, what percentage of your production output was steady with the small brewery capacity? It wasn't 50% then, was it?
It was nearly 50%.
Was it really? Okay. Yeah. Wow.
I mean, it would swing more because we had much less tank capacity. So,
right.
For example, if in demand was coming up, we wouldn't have very much steady in the tanks because we were brewing the specials. Yeah, it was probably around about 40%. So yeah, that's not 50%, but you know, still a sizable
amount.
Very
significant. And it was more or less available on almost every can release, I guess, or certainly you know, perhaps every second week, was it, or whatever. Yeah.
So that, I mean, that was a conscious decision, and it makes a lot of things easier as a brewery. So it makes scheduling easier.
Yeah.
It makes securing the ingredients easier. Mm-hmm. Like just projections and how you think the business is going to do, it gives you a bit more of a handle on that. It also gives, when you make a lot of different beers, if you make a lot of one beer, it also gives the brewers a bit more headspace.
I bet. Yeah, you're not having to create something brand new and sweat every single fine detail of it, I guess. I'm sure you still do focus on every detail, but it's not quite the same pressure, I'm sure, is it?
Yeah, you can get into the groove a little bit.
Yeah.
So now we're doing 12 brews a week, and if six of them are steady, then the brewers are like, right, I can sort of, you know, they're not doing it on autopilot.
No.
But they can, they know it well enough that, you know, they can relax a little bit more.
That's interesting. Yeah. Yeah. I'm sure they appreciate that.
Yeah.
Are you making enough steady now? Could the market take a significant further step?
Buy more. Yeah. I mean, it's definitely not like it was. As in, we were completely, we still get a lot of requests that we can't, for orders that we can't meet. So yes, there's definitely still plenty of room to brew more steady.
Yeah.
I don't know if it's a situation where it, with anybody's beer or with anybody's thing, if it's a thing that it feeds its own success, hopefully people don't become bored with it.
What's the export situation like with steady? Is that, are you shipping much out to the continent?
Not really. I don't know. So sorry, we're exporting around 3% of our volume, so a really small amount.
Goodness, yeah, that's tiny. Yeah,
and I don't know what proportion of that is steady.
No, fair enough, but it's negligible anyway, isn't it? Yeah,
I'd imagine it was more likely the specials.
And is that a casualty of Brexit, or were you never doing very much export?
We were never doing much export because of the things that you were alluding to before. We could have done, and it's kind of like easy money because you don't pay duty. But we felt that we should, if there's people in the UK asking for it, we should do our best to meet their demands first, really.
I think that's most people, I think, would appreciate that was the right thing to do, even though it may not have been the most profitable thing. Yeah.
Yeah. Also, as I alluded to earlier, these beers are inherently prone to instability, should we say?
Yeah,
so they have a shorter shelf life than most beers.
Yes.
Not, I shouldn't say shelf life, but you know what I mean.
I don't know what you mean. Yeah, they need to be drunk fresh more urgently than any other beer style, basically. Yeah.
So if you export beer, then you've already lost a couple of weeks.
You run the risk of people not getting at its freshest. Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah.
That makes sense, Gareth. Let's talk about the second beer we've got, which is Into the Light, 6.2% IPA. Let me read the tasting notes for this. This IPA is brewed with the same base recipe as Into the Haze, that I'm sure many people will be familiar with, but utilizes a new hop variety, Luminosa, from Indie Hops, bringing sweet candied orange peel along with peach and a mango. It sits perfectly with our house yeast atop a pillowy oat base. Absolutely. And in fact, you know, that is the word, isn't it, for day of beers is pillowy. Yes. And, you know, if you had to give people just one word to describe Daya, I'm sure 9 out of 10 craft beer fans would use that exact phrase. So, yeah, it's this is another lovely beer. Loving the fruit flavors, actually, really, really tangy, and just. I know this is a brand new beer as well, so it's super fresh. Not that the steady that we just drank wasn't also super fresh. I'm sure it was, but you know that this really is singing in terms of the hop flavors, and yeah, just another lovely beer. You know exactly what I'm expecting from Daya. So what's your thoughts on this one?
So this is one of the reasons why I chose this is. Well, obviously, it's a new release. And actually, this was the first use of Luminosa hops outside of the US.
Oh, wow. Awesome.
So, from Indie Hops. And I need to give a shout out to Loughran Brewing Stores in Ireland. Yeah, they helped hook us up with Luminosa.
Brilliant.
Yeah, it's a brand new hop variety, and mm-hmm. it's really exciting. Again, audio only. Everyone will have to trust us that it's delicious. But it's got some like different characteristics to, it's an American hop, but it's got some slightly different characteristics. So like I get quite a lot of as I said, well, as it says in the description, like sweet orange, but also like a pear, like really ripe pear aroma. Yeah. Yeah, it's pretty distinctive and really exciting. We've managed to secure a bit more for this year. Hopefully we'll get more of it next year.
Ooh. Brilliant. I know when we first met at Anspach and Hop Day a few weeks ago for the Alpha King judging, which was a fun way to spend a few hours, wasn't it? On a midweek lunchtime. But you were literally just about to head off for hop selection, weren't you? So can you give us a sense of that experience? Because, you know, this is one of the things that, you know, I very much on my bucket list, although, you know, as I said a couple of weeks ago on this podcast, probably on my bucket list of things I would never get to do, because I'm not planning to open a brewery. And even if I did, I'm sure I would never get to the capacity to have the leverage to go and do proper hop selection. So I will live vicariously through the you know, the explanations of others in this regard. So yeah, tell us what hop selection is like.
Hop selection is amazing, and it's a great privilege to be able to do it.
Oh yeah.
So as a brewery that's focused on hoppy beer, it's really important for us to secure the highest quality raw materials for yes, everything, absolutely. Not just hops.
So it's not just a jolly, then, you're saying. It was an important business trip.
Yeah. So, well, yeah, it is. So it's so basically what happens, I'll try and give a sort of a synopsis for people.
Yeah, please do.
So hops are harvested once a year. Yep. In the Northern Hemisphere, that usually falls late August, early September.
Right.
Slightly depending on weather and growing conditions. Yeah. So the hops are harvested. And then if you are eligible for hop selection, your hop supplier will invite you over and they will present to you different batches of hops.
Yep.
So I'm sure lots of your listeners are familiar with different varieties such as Mosaic, Amarillo, Citra, Simcoe, maybe not Luminosa because it's brand new. I'm sure your listeners are familiar with hop varieties. All those different varieties have different aroma and flavor characteristics in the beer. What's maybe not so obvious is that within one variety, there is still a lot of variation. So you can have Mosaic grown in one place by one farm, grown in another place by a different farm. And those, both of them are Mosaic, but they will smell different. And they will,
yeah, that's hard to sort of, to the beer, to get your head around, isn't it, really, from a layman's perspective, I guess.
Yeah, it's kind of like, well, I use the example of, it's a bit of a simplistic analogy, but like wine grapes.
Right.
Now, Chardonnay and French Chardonnay is different to Australian Chardonnay. Sure. And there's lots of reasons why that is. But one of the reasons is the growing conditions of the grapes.
Yep.
So it's the same with hops. So basically, when you go for hop selection, we were selecting lots of different varieties with different suppliers. And I don't want to give them unfair airtime. So I will just say we got to smell lots of different batches of hops.
Yes.
So I'm just taking Mosaic as an example. We smelt 6 different batches of Mosaic from 6 different farms.
Yeah.
And we then basically get to say, I want that one.
And being the key ingredient to steady, this is, you know, what, 30, 40% of your hop selection.
It's really important.
It's got to be right, isn't it? Yeah.
So we say we want that one. And that means that when that's all packaged and ready for the next year, we just get that one batch.
Yes.
So if you aren't able to do hop selection, what it means is that you'll be getting different batches.
Yeah.
And that's not to say they won't be good.
No.
I'm sure they will be great, but they will be slightly different.
Yeah.
So being, as I said, it's a privilege to be able to do it because it allows us that extra level of consistency. And it's also amazing to go and see the farms, the hop farms, and see the processing facilities and see how much time and effort and energy goes into producing hops.
Yeah.
That's also something which is probably underestimated by the beer drinking public.
Oh, definitely. Yeah,
through no fault of their own. But yeah, you don't get to see that. It's an enormous amount of work.
Absolutely. And I've been to Brookhouse last year or the year before
for the hops,
you know, so actually, yeah, you know, I've got the lucky enough to sort of walk through the processing barn and, you know, and watch the amazing, you know, steps that goes through. Yeah,
they're quite a fragile hop in terms of weather resistance and pest and disease resistance. So the hop farmers don't have an easy life. Like, everything's up against them.
No, absolutely. Yeah. Do you have a team if you go over, or is it just yourself, Gareth?
So this year was the first time we'd done it for 3 years, actually, because of COVID.
Yeah.
In the interim years, we got sent batches.
Yeah, so it was better than nothing, but not quite the same experience.
Not the same. No. So it was me and Theo doing the selection.
Brilliant. And did you get a chance to hang out in Portland and go and drink some beer and just, you know, soak up the ambience a little bit?
Yeah, we drank some beers. It's a great time of year to go over there as well, because it's hop harvest, there's lots of small breweries doing fresh hop beers,
fresh hop festivals and the like as well.
Yeah, so that's also you get to see things like Luminosa from Indie Hops that are the new things that will be coming over, because it takes sometimes a little time for things to trickle down from the States to the UK. So we were very privileged to get access to this Luminosa hop and to be able to brew with it.
Brilliant. So apart from getting some great mosaic for your steady, what else are you really pleased with from this year's selection?
Actually, the standard overall was really, really high.
Great.
So we select with three different suppliers. Again, I don't want to give them unfair airtime. Yeah. But there wasn't really anything disappointing. Yeah, the Simcoe's our favorite hop. Right. It's my favorite hop.
Oh, it's brilliant. Yeah.
Mosaic is the one we use most of, but I think Simcoe's our favorite because it's so versatile.
Yeah.
The Citra was also fantastic.
Yeah.
We also did strata selection. Brilliant. So we actually got to smell eight different lots of strata.
Wow.
It was quite tiring. And actually, me and Theo were rubbing them and sniffing them, and we sort of looked up at each other and we were like, "What? This is difficult to decide." Like, they're all so good.
Right.
Which is what the hop growers and the hop suppliers want. They want.
Yeah.
So that's a better difficult decision to have than.
Well, I'm about to make a statement that I don't think I've ever made on this podcast, which is I actually think my favorite ever craft beer was your saturated in strata. I love strata. I love your saturated series, and I love New England dippers. So, you know, that was a sort of perfect
bang, bang, bang.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. So that, you know, that's an amazing beer. And, you know, I always, you know, grab as many cans as I can when, you know, when I see it around. I don't know what sort of rotation you're brewing that. I know you've brewed it a few times, haven't you? But is that, you know, do you do it annually? I'm not even sure, to be honest with you.
We try and do that a few times a year.
Okay, so brilliant. Yeah.
Strata is an incredible hop. Mm. It's got a very wide range of flavor descriptors. So lots of different brewers I talk to, they say they get certain things out of it that we don't get so much, or is more like a secondary.
Yeah, so, just because slightly different processes.
Yeah, I guess so. It's also picked very early, which is good for the hop farms.
It's nice to get something processed and out the door before the main harvest comes in. Yeah.
If any of your listeners care about that, I'm not sure. But
I'm sure we all care about the hop farm doing well, because they are the source of the magic ingredient, aren't they? You know, with all due respect to malt and yeast, hops are truly, you know, that is the magic ingredient, isn't it?
That's what we're focusing on at the moment anyway. Mm. Strata is fantastic. It's one of those ones that can stand on its own, but also works well with lots of other things,
right?
Which is the dream, really. Mm-hmm. Yeah,
brilliant. So, but yeah, keep keep making the saturated series, and I'll keep buying it. I have, last few weeks on this podcast, I've had several guests who have told me that big beers are going out of fashion, you know, and they're not brewing tippers anymore, and they're not seeing so much same kind of demand for dippers as they were. But you know, hopefully that isn't. You know, I'm sure you guys are probably experiencing something similar, but hopefully not so much that you're going to scale back the dipper production. At least I hope not.
We are noticing a bigger preference for what I would call sensible strength beers.
Yeah, it's pretty fair comment, to be honest with you.
Yeah,
I should know better, but you know.
No, well, yeah, save me from myself. Yeah. But actually, so we are very pleased with our double IPAs, but actually, as a brewery, we are more into the 4 to 5, low sixes. That's quite right.
So you should be. I mean, yeah,
that's what we prefer to make. Yeah. Prefer to drink.
Yeah.
We're not going to stop making double IPAs.
No. And look, I'm drinking 5 or 6 pails and 10 IPAs for every dipper that I drink, probably. But you know, I know which one that I enjoy the most. Is it? Anyway, moving swiftly on, Gareth. So I do have a variation on the "What makes you different" question, which I usually ask at this stage, which is kind of fun. Which is to ask you, what do you wish you'd done differently? So here I'm looking for you to sort of pick something from your, you know, experience at Daya that you say, well, maybe if we hadn't have done that, if we'd have done this instead, we'd have been that much further ahead. Or if we hadn't, you know, and that can be a brewing or a business question. I don't, you know, it's take it in any way, in any direction you like. But it's often sort of interesting to look back and sort of say, well, maybe, you know, that if we'd have gone in this direction instead of that, we would be happier now. I'm not sure.
I'm going to answer selfishly.
All right, so that's fine.
From I wish we had got a pilot brew kit.
Mm.
So
you still you're talking about even still now, or at one stage in development, or
no? Yeah, I think it. Well, yeah. Okay, that's maybe not what we would have done differently, but I wish we'd got a pilot kit earlier on, because we're unlikely to get one now.
Oh, so you still haven't got a pilot kit?
Nope. No. 4,000 litres. Take it or leave it, yeah.
Wow. So you've got nowhere to play.
Well, no, we can play around with... So we can do things like splitting batches and try different dry hops and things like that. But yeah, with regards to making wort, we haven't got any sort of small batch.
Okay, yeah.
Kit, so that would be really cool to play around
on your
with.
Christmas list, is it? Yeah,
yeah. I mean, but that's like that would be satisfying. Like, that's not something the business needs, I don't think. That's just
no,
like,
I guess
be a nice to have.
Yeah, fair comment.
Something I wish we'd done earlier, or wish we'd done, put in a CO2 recovery system.
Okay,
a couple of years ago, because now CO2 prices
now so
are
expensive.
Absolutely
yeah.
crazy.
Yeah. Is that something you're even still thinking about? Or?
Yeah, we're looking at it now. I don't want to bore people with our overheads, but yeah, the cost of CO2
terrifying in every direction. I know. Yeah.
It's absurd. Yeah. They sort of got you on a one-way contract. They sort of say you need to make sure you buy this much, and at any point we can increase the price. Which, I mean,
yeah. Doesn't sound like a pleasant kind of supplier customer relationship.
No. But we need it, so we're kind of
beholden. Of course you do. Yeah. No, good answers. Happy with those. Yeah. That's all good. Gareth, what can you tell me about events coming up that will be either locally for you at your tap rooms or elsewhere in Cheltenham, or perhaps further afield? You know, and that could be tap takeovers, I don't know, even festivals that perhaps you've got in the calendar for next year that you can talk about.
Well, we've got, now that we've got the mixed fermentation tap room space up and running, that's it's quite exciting to be able to have a second space for hosting
Absolutely.
Things a little bit,
yeah.
A little bit more intimate, shall we say, and a bit more, mm-hmm. bit more focused, without taking away from our main taproom space. So
right.
we've done a couple of events with food producers. So we've had Half Cut in and mm-hmm. Iska Wines in to do some beer and food pairing. That was
brilliant.
That was really cool. So we're looking to do more of those.
Definitely. And as you say, it's nice to be able to do it in that sort of in an intimate space, and at the same time not have to turn away your sort of your regular customers, as it were. So it's really cool that you've got those two spaces to be able to sort of focus on different things.
No, exactly. And we're also looking to make a bit more of a feature of our mixed fermentation releases. So as and when the beers become available.
Nice.
Obviously they're a little bit of a lore unto themselves. They're ready when they're ready.
One of the charms of it, isn't it? Yeah, you're never quite sure what you're going to get and when it's going to come.
Yeah, exactly. So we've got as organized as we can be with that. So we'll be doing probably not so formal events, but we'll make sure there's a few brewers around and pouring some bottles. We've got we've got quite a big stash pile of smaller experimental sort of mixed firm things as well. So if
now
people
you're talking.
Well, yeah, exactly. So if people want to come on down, they might get a chance to try something that is super exclusive and not repeatable.
Wow, that would be awesome. Yeah, no, that sounds just like my kind of thing. Brilliant.
Yeah, we're also, we've done, in the main tap room, we've done a few music events this year.
Oh,
so,
nice.
Every couple of months, there's a promoter, a guy called Bird Out, that's mm-hmm. he operates under, and bringing some good names.
Right.
So that's a bit more of a party vibe at the tap room.
Right.
So yeah, late night dancing.
Excellent.
Yeah, no, that's really good fun. They're always a lot of fun, those evenings.
I bet. Fantastic.
Yeah.
Further afield, any tap takeovers elsewhere that you can talk about? You're aware of.
So the next one is more down your way, is in the Southampton Arms.
Oh, nice. Yeah.
8th and 9th of December.
Brilliant.
So I'll be in London for the Brewers Congress event. So,
oh, yeah. I went to that last year, actually. I haven't done anything about it so far this year. I'm hoping somebody's going to invite me. But
I've never actually been before, which is probably a bit slack of me. So, yeah, that'll be really nice. And, yeah,
cool.
I'll be having some beers. People can come and say hi. And
have
a bit of a chat. Yeah. But next year, we've got, maybe this won't be that surprising for people, but we're doing Indie Man.
Yes.
Pop City and Dark and Wild City as well. That was really cool.
Brilliant.
A few weeks ago. And it's the return of the little summer beer bash.
Yes.
Left-handed giant. So that'll be really cool.
That will.
Oh, and I'm assuming these hills will be happening again.
Yes.
Festival. I mean, that was.
I hope so. I guarantee we're going to be there this year. I think I've seen the dates for that already. To be honest with you, I think we've got it in our festival calendar already for 23.
That was superb. It'll be a busy summer.
Indeed, it all starts again for us at Sheffield Indie Beer Feast. We've got tickets for that already, the 3rd of March. So looking forward to that weekend.
Yeah, it's a nice early one.
3rd, 4th of March, yeah. That beer release is coming up in the next few weeks.
Yeah, what have we got? We've got a pretty exciting collab, three-way collab with Yakima Chief Hops.
Yeah.
I'm not sure if I can tell you that much about it, but it's pretty good. Yeah. What else have we got coming up? We've got an Imperial Stout in tank, which we obviously don't do very much of.
No.
So that's strange for us.
Yeah.
12.5%.
That'd be good to see. Yeah. Great.
With cacao nibs and vanilla.
Mm-hmm.
So not too crazy, not by today's standards. That's a very tame Imperial Stout.
But I guess it's a big boy at 12.5%, so that'll be good. Yeah.
We've also done another dark beer recently with, so I mentioned my first craft beer was from Brava Pinta in Poland.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
So we had them over, we went to their festival, actually me and Nils went to their festival in the summer, which was very cool.
Yeah.
In the Żywiec in Poland.
Right.
Right next to where Żywiec Polish lager is made.
Oh, cool.
Yeah, and then they came back here to do a collab and we did a Baltic Porter, which is...
Nice. Yeah, I like a Baltic Porter. Yeah,
it's not that uncommon, but slightly unusual, I guess.
The dark lagers, I'm a fan of dark lagers, absolutely.
Yeah, they're and we've not done anything crazy with that. It's
just straight up. Yeah.
We've got another batch of Best Foot Forward coming out. Our cask bitter. That's probably not that exciting, but it's great.
I like to see you guys doing things like that. I think it's nice to see to see you sort of expand your flex your range muscles a little bit, and that's good. Yeah.
Oh, I should definitely plug another collab we've got in tank at the moment. So there's a college near us called the National Star College.
Right.
And they're a college for people with learning difficulties.
Okay. Yeah.
So every year we try and do something with them.
Fabulous.
Do some fundraising. So this year we're making a beer. It's called Daya Times National Star.
Brilliant.
These of that will be going to the National Star College.
Nice.
That's a bit of plugging.
Yeah, no, good. Good to see. Excellent. Where's the best place for people to get their hands on some Daya beers?
The best place for people to buy our beer is the tap room.
Yes, agree.
That's a bit of a trite answer. Or our web shop, which is also a little bit self-serving. Or if you can't go to those places, if you find it somewhere, I don't know, just go and try it. Chat to the person behind the bar if you can. And we're always very interested in hearing people's feedback. So
I mean, I guess you're pretty widely available in bottle shops these days as well, aren't you? Again, because the distribution is now sorted out, the production capacity is there to satisfy it. So hopefully, find you in the local bottle shop.
I guess the main, well, this is very wide areas, but London, Manchester, and Bristol would be the three conurbations where a lot of our beer goes.
Sure, absolutely.
Yeah, but come and see us and say hello.
Come down to Cheltenham. Yeah, well, you're literally 100 yards from the station there, aren't you? From Cheltenham station, one of the heaviest trafficked railway stations in the south and west of England. So wherever you are, you get a train to Cheltenham Spa, I'm sure, without too many changes. So
it's very convenient.
Come and check it out. Yeah.
Sorry, that's a bit of a boring answer.
No, it's good. You come on a Friday or a Saturday, you can come to both the Mixed Firm and the Clean Beer Tap Room on the same visit. Yeah. Good, then let's get into the home straight, Gareth. And here I ask you to give what I call a shout out to a little guy. And here I want you to mention one or more local to Cheltenham, I guess, beer businesses that you think are doing an amazing job promoting independent craft beer. And that can be another brewery, a tap room, a pub, a bottle shop, even a restaurant or a cafe. But a business that you think is doing a great job promoting not just Daya, but independent craft beer generally.
Okay, can I have a few?
You can. Crack on.
Okay. So for bottle shops, there's a bottle shop in Cheltenham called Favourite Beers.
Right.
They've just celebrated their 12th birthday.
Nice. That's very, very long. That's a lot of dog years, isn't it, in short terms.
If you're ever anywhere this way, they're definitely worth checking out. Extremely friendly, amazing, nice. Amazing selection. And they've been doing it for a long time. Brilliant. So favorite beers. Local breweries was obviously Gloucester Brewery, where I cut my teeth.
Yes, indeed.
Also Stroud Brewery, who do quite a lot of organic beer, which is something you don't see very much of these days. Nice. They've got a really nice tap room as well. And Stroud is a pretty cool place.
Stroud's lovely. There's a lot of really cool places around you, aren't there? You know, it's a nice part of the world.
Where are some pubs? Okay, there's a couple of pubs. One is the Cheltenham Motor Club, which is a motorsport social club in Cheltenham. If you're not a member, you have to pay £2 to get in, but the beer is really cheap and very really reasonable. Good.
Yeah, you save it to get your money back on your first pint. Yeah,
yeah. It's Neil keeps a banging pint of beer, so that. And my last one would be the Railway in Cheltenham, which they stock local beers and beers from Bristol, so like our area, and staff are extremely friendly. Food's great, garden's great. Very easy to stay too late there on a Sunday evening.
Sounds good. Yeah, brilliant. All right. Well, thanks for that. No, I'm sure those all sound brilliant. Let's move on to the wrap-up question then. And here I need to know from you, what would be your ultimate happy hour? I need to know where you would be, who you would be with, and most specifically, what beer you would be drinking. And there is one qualifier, which is the beer doesn't necessarily need to match the venue. So, you know, if they wouldn't typically pour in your desired beer, you can bring it with you in this fantasy world.
Am I allowed two answers to this?
I don't see why not. One? Yeah, okay. Go for it.
My first one would be I'd like to have a pint of Holden's Golden Glow with Terry Pratchett sat in one of the Black Country pubs that serve that beer.
Right, love it,
because I love Terry Pratchett, and I think he would be an extremely entertaining person to have a conversation in a pub.
I bet.
My other answer, which is maybe a bit more craft beer related, I would like to give John Kimmick of The Alchemist a can of Steady Rolling Man.
Yes.
Sat on top of one of the hills around Cheltenham and ask him for his honest opinion.
Yeah, brilliant.
I mean, I'm sure he'd give me his honest opinion.
Up on Cleve Hill overlooking the race course, mate.
Yeah, something like that. Yeah, perfect.
Lovely. Yeah, and I like that a lot.
Maybe have that's you, not happy hour, but yeah.
Even though that was my last question, I was reserved the right to have a follow up. So have you sought feedback on Steady from people, you know, of that sort of standing in the industry? I'm just really curious to, you know, have you exposed it much to our friends overseas, you know, in the US?
So on previous trips, we've taken beers over, and I think we have a reasonable reputation in the UK, but I think in the US we're probably nobody's. So it was a funny situation where we met the guys from some of the guys from Treehouse during hop selection 3 years ago.
Oh, right.
And, you know, we're trying to play it cool. And we did a reasonable job, but we gave them some beer and we said, you know, like, we're not trying to collab. We're not trying to ask you for a collab, but please let us know what you think of, please let us know what you think of our beer. And I'm sure they get that 100 times a week.
I bet they do.
No, we've never like particularly sought it, but some of us have visited some of these places. I think if you work in a brewery, you understand that you get those questions all the time. So when we visit somewhere, we try not to be
trying to be a people. Different sort of guest, aren't you? Not asking the cliche kind of question.
But maybe we should try a bit harder with that.
Yeah, it's a tricky one. But no, I don't see why it wouldn't stand that taste test with anything out there, to be honest with you. I think it's a great beer. And I love what you guys are doing, Gareth. You know, I've been trying to get you on, not you personally, but Day. I have been sort of messaging different people in the business for a number of, literally since we started this podcast, actually. So it was great serendipity that we bumped into one another at Anspach and Hop Day. And I really appreciate your time this evening coming on. This has been a really, one of the guests that I was absolutely desperate to get on the podcast. So it's been a lot of fun chatting to you. Really appreciate what Daya has done and continues to do for UK and European craft beer.
It's our pleasure. It's really nice to talk to people and to be able to talk via you to lots of people.
So that's
really nice to do. And thank you for everybody who's ever bought any of our beer. We are doing it for you guys.
Yeah, I think that's very fair, and it's easy to lose sight of that, isn't it? But no, this is an industry where the customer feedback is probably more accessible than most, actually, and often I'm sure is very glowing and fulsome, and I'm sure that's what keeps you going through those long shifts and a lot of the hard work that's behind us. Thanks again, really appreciate your time this evening, and we will speak soon. I'm definitely going to try and get down to Cheltenham at some point the next few months. I'll let you know when I'm going to be around.
It'd be great to have you. Just say the word.
Perfect. Thanks, Gareth.